जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी,
जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी,
जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन, यशोदनन्दन व्रज जनरञ्जन, यमुना तीर वनचारी, यमुना तीर वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर सत हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा श्याम सुंदर ललिता विशाखा की जय। श्री श्री कृष्ण बलराम की जय। श्री श्री गौर निताय की जय। श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग की जय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय,
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय,
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। आई एम रीडिंग फ्रॉम भगवद गीता चैप्टर 18 टेक्स्ट 67. इदं ते न तपस्काय न भक्ताय कदाचन, न चाशुश्रूषवे वाच्यं न च मां योऽभ्यसूयति. This confidential knowledge may not be explained to those who are not austere or devoted in devotional service, nor engage in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. This is the translation. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam वंदेहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगण ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नम ओं विष्णुपादाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। आई एम वेरी हैप्पी टू बी विद द डिवोटीज ऑफ VIHE. It has been several years since I had the good fortune to participate in the activities of the VIHE. It is a wonderful service that is being done through the VIHE for so many years. And personally, I can testify that hundreds and hundreds of devotees have benefited over these years with the very personal nature of the teachings, the quality of the education there, and the mood of care and the personal touch that is given. That makes it all the more very effective and very praiseworthy. So my words of appreciation definitely for Prashanta Mataji and all the other devotees who are serving in the VIHE for the glorious service that you are all doing. And for all the devotees who are attending these classes and taking the various courses, whether it's Bhakti Shastri or Bhakti Vaibhav or any other courses, my word of appreciation for you as well, because without you, this institute would not be able to function. I believe you have been covering the topic of the six enemies, the Shadripu, lust, greed, anger, envy, pride and illusion. And various devotees have been dealing with these very important topics one by one. And the topic that I will be dealing with is envy. It's a very, very important topic, undoubtedly. And it's going to be done in two sessions today as well as on Friday. So what I will do is, I will begin with a discussion on the philosophical aspects of envy. Try to study the topic of envy philosophically. And next time, on Friday morning when we meet, I will try to deal with the more practical aspects of envy and dealing with envy and so on. So we will divide it like that. So I would like to begin this discussion by speaking, or rather repeating, what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, because this is our foundation, the Bhagavad Gita. And here Krishna will be speaking about how it is essential to be free of envy in order to understand his message. That is the Bhagavad Gita. And the verse that I just read now explains precisely that. Again, I'll repeat that. This confidential knowledge may not be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. So he says, idam. Idam means this. This knowledge, this message of Bhagavad Gita should not be given to four kinds of people. And there is a progression here which is very interesting, which is also mentioned in the purport and which makes it very relevant for us as devotees. Krishna begins by saying, na tapaskaya. So na means not. So you should not or never give this message, idam, this message of Bhagavad Gita, to those who are atapaskaya. Tapaska indicates one who does tapasya. Tapaskaya means unto one who does tapasya, and a means not. It is a negation. So atapaskaya, na atapaskaya, which means that one should not give this message to one who is not austere. So one who is not austere will not be able to understand the message of Bhagavad Gita. So that is why one should not take the trouble of trying to explain it, because then what's the point? Because that person won't be able to understand. Then the next is next point that Prabhupada mentions in the purport is that even if one is austere, but if one is abhakta, one is not a devotee, one should still not explain the message of Bhagavad Gita to that person, because he or she will not be able to understand. Because even though that person is austere, but that person is not a devotee. Na abhaktaya. So unto one who is an abhakta, one should not give this message. Na abhaktaya. So whether one is not austere, or even if one is austere, but one, if one is not a devotee, one should not speak Bhagavad Gita to that person, because they cannot understand it. Kadachana. Kadachana means at any time. So rather strong words. Now, one may be austere, one may be a devotee, and Prabhupada says one may pose as a devotee. But what does it mean to be a devotee? That one must be engaged in devotional service. So if one is austere, one poses as a devotee, but one is not engaged in devotional service, na cha shushrushave. So even if one ashushrushave, even if one poses as a devotee, but one is not actually engaged in devotional service, one should still not speak Bhagavad Gita to that person, because that person will not be able to understand this. We come across this word shushrusha in the Srimad Bhagavatam also. I'm sure you've encountered this word in the Bhagavad Gita as well. It comes on some occasions. So a shushushava indicates somebody who is not engaged in devotional service. Na cha a shushrushave. So unto one who is not engaged in devotional service, one should not speak this Bhagavad Gita, because that person will also not be able to understand. And then finally, what Krishna uses the word abhyasuyati, envious. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, basically saying that even if one is austere, even if one is a devotee, even if one is engaged in devotional service of the Lord, one should still not speak the Bhagavad Gita to that person if that person is envious. Because if one is envious, one will still not be able to understand Bhagavad Gita. So, very, very important, very interesting. And this applies for all of us who are devotees. We are practicing devotees. So we are austere in the sense that we follow some regulative principles, we avoid certain things that may be difficult to avoid, we do certain things that may be difficult to do. We do it because we are sadhikas, we are practicing devotees. So we are austere to some degree, we are devotees to some degree, we engage in practical devotional service of various sorts to some degree. So therefore, this last point, the fourth point, is very important for us, because if there is envy, then we may not understand Bhagavad Gita. So we may think, well, how is that so? We are getting the point, we are getting it. You know, I'm not this body, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you know, the different forms of yoga, we've gone through Bhakti Shastri and so on. So what does it really mean that even if we are practicing devotees and if we are envious, we can't understand Bhagavad Gita? The answer is that we will not actually get the realization of it. Because Jnana and Vijnana, there are both things, right? There is a theoretical understanding of it and there is the realization of it. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada in the purport says that there are many persons who are envious of Krishna because he has explained in the Bhagavad Gita that he is supreme and nothing is equal to or superior to him. Such person should not be told Bhagavad Gita because they cannot understand. Similarly, a few verses later, in text 71 of the same chapter, Bhagavad Gita, the 18th chapter, Krishna says, Shraddhavan anusuyascha shrinuyat api yo naraha sopi muktaha shubhalokan prapnuyat punya karmana. He says, and one who listens with faith and without envy becomes free from sinful reactions and attains to the planets where the pious dwell. So, Shraddhavan, we are familiar with this word, Shraddha, faith. Shraddhavan means one who is full of faith, a faithful person. Anasuyascha, the word asuya indicates envy. We have seen this in the previous verse that I quoted. It is related. So, anasuya means not envious. So, what Krishna is saying here is that if one is faithful, Shraddhavan, and one is anasuya, one is free from envy, then, and if one listens, Shrinuyat apyo naraha, so if a person who has these qualities listens to the Bhagavad Gita, what happens? Saha, that person, becomes muktaha, becomes free. Free from what? Free from all sinful reactions. And what kind of destination does such a person achieve? Shubhal lokan prapnuyat. That person attains the planets which are auspicious, shubha. Lokam means the planets. In plural, so shubhal lokan. These persons may attain to the planets in which the pious dwell, punya karmanam. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that he gives an example of these pious planets. He indicates the pole star or the Dhruva Loka, where Dhruva Maharaj resides with other devotees of the Supreme Lord. So even if one does not become a pure devotee, and if one actually follows the teachings of a bona fide devotee of the Lord, then one will attain at least to the planets where the pious dwell. Now, in the purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada asks the question that in the previous verse, in text 67, which I quoted earlier, it has been mentioned that one should not speak the Bhagavad Gita to those who are envious. But it so happens that devotees speak the message of the Bhagavad Gita in an open class. And it is not expected in that class that everyone will be devotees. So there will be many people who are, strangers who may not have any familiarity with the Bhagavad Gita. So, why do such devotees speak in an open class when Krishna says here that one should speak only to the non-envious? And Srila Prabhupada gives the explanation that even though there are many people who may not be devotees, but there may also be many who are not envious. So they still have faith in Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even after hearing it, they may not actually become very staunch devotees of the Lord. But if such persons hear from a bona fide devotee, then they will become free from sinful reactions and attain to the planets where the pious dwell. Now, if one actually becomes a devotee, then naturally one will attain to the spiritual world. So there is something in Sanskrit logic and grammar called kaimutya nyaya. Nyaya means the logic. Kaimutya indicates kim uta. If for such a thing, we get this result. If we do this, then how much more will we get? So if one is not envious, but one is not really a practicing devotee and is hearing Bhagavad Gita faithfully, and one attains to the planets of the pious, then how much more will be the benefit that will be attained by one who is not envious, who is faithful, and who is also a practicing devotee? One will then attain to the spiritual world. So therefore, it is very important that we understand the significance of being free from envy. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 9th chapter, Krishna also says, idam tu te guhyatamam pravakshyam yanasu yave jnanam vijnana sahitam yajnatva mokshase shubhat. He says, my dear Arjuna, I am speaking this message to you because you are free from envy. Idam tuya guhya tamam. Guhya means secret or confidential. Tama indicates, superlative. That, you know, in terms of positive, comparative, and superlative, you know, good, better, and best. So, guhya, guhya tara, guhya tama. Guhya means confidential, so it's a positive statement. Guhya tara indicates a comparative statement, which means it's more guhya, more confidential than just confidential. And then superlative, the best, which means guhya tama, the most confidential. So in the first verse of the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, idam tu te guhya tamam. So this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is being explained to you because I'm speaking this, pravakshami, Krishna says, because you're anusuya. Anusuya, again, we come to that same word, without envy. And you will be able to understand this not only intellectually, jnanam, but also vijnanam. You will actually be able to realize it. I referred to this point a few minutes ago, where freedom from envy, when it is coupled with faith and practice of devotional service, that leads to not only an intellectual understanding of the scriptures, of the path of devotion, but actual realization of spiritual truths. Yajnatva mokshase ashubhat. Then one has actually got the jnana and the vijnana, the knowledge and the practical realization of that knowledge, and one becomes free from all the hardships and miseries of this material world. So in the purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada mentions that the word anasuyave is very significant. Generally, commentators, Srila Prabhupada says, even if highly scholarly, are all envious of Krishna. They write inaccurately, and therefore their scholarly commentaries cannot have any benefit. They are all useless. One who criticizes the character of Krishna without knowing him is a fool, and one should carefully avoid such commentaries. And then again, in the 18th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, ahankaram balam darpam kamam krodham sasamshitaha mam atma paradeheshu pradishvanto bhyasuyakaha. Bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demon becomes envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in his own body and in the bodies of others, and blasphemes against the real religion. So, in this chapter, the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, as you have studied in the Bhakti Shastri course, Krishna is describing the qualities of the divine and demoniac persons. And in this 18th verse, he is in the midst of describing the qualities of the demoniac nature. And he says that bewildered by all these attributes like false ego, strength, pride, lust, anger, a person of demoniac nature becomes envious of the Supreme Lord, of that Supreme Lord who is situated in one's own body and also in the bodies of others, and therefore one begins to blaspheme against the real religion. So I'd like to quote a little section of the purport here. Srila Prabhupada says, a demoniac person being always against God's supremacy does not like to believe in the scripture. He is envious of both the scripture and the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is caused by his so-called prestige, wealth, etc. He does not know that this life is a preparation for the next life. Not knowing this, he is actually envious of his own self and of others. He commits violence on others' bodies and on his own. He puts forward false arguments against the existence of God and denies scriptural authority. In the next verse, Krishna says that such people who are envious and mischievous or cruel are repeatedly cast into the ocean of birth and death, and they have to take birth in various demoniac species of life. So now here in this verse, what's interesting is that envy of Krishna leads to envy of the scriptures, and envy of Krishna and the scriptures leads to envy of not only everybody else, of all living entities, but also envious of oneself, envy of oneself. And how is that so? Because one deprives oneself of the opportunity to prepare for the next life in a genuine sense. So one does not know that this life is meant as a preparation for the next life, and ultimately one is meant to attain a life in the spiritual world which will be eternal, free from envy, free from all the miseries of material existence. So Prabhupada here makes some very important points. So ultimately, you know, all this envy against the Lord manifests in the form of envy against all other living entities, and even envy against oneself. Actually, this envy is the beginning point of the discussion in the Srimad Bhagavatam as well, when Vyasadev says, Dharma Projita Kaitavutra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam. So this Bhagavatam speaks about a dharma which rejects dharma projita, pra-ujjita, kaitava. It very firmly rejects all dharmas that are cheating dharmas. Because any dharma that has any form of material self-interest involved will be a cheating dharma. Why? Because self-interest means envy. Self-interest means that one does not wish to love and serve the Supreme Lord. One does not wish to accept that it is only the Lord who is the ultimate enjoyer of everything, and that we can only cooperate in the enjoyment of the Lord, and that is the success of our life. So because of not knowing and because of neglecting this fundamental point, one goes after things apart from devotional service. So therefore, any scripture or any religious path or philosophy that advocates any form of sense gratification or anything that is apart from pure devotional service is a cheating religion, because it incorporates a kind of envy. So therefore, it says, Dharma Prochita Kaitravo Tra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam. So this speaks about a supreme dharma, not about cheating dharmas which are full of envy, but this parama dharma, paro dharma, is a dharma where there is no place for envy. And therefore this Bhagavatam is meant for nirmatsara, nirmatsaranam, satam. Satam indicates the saintly people. So those saintly people are characterized by being nirmatsara. I mentioned the word asuya as meaning the word envy. Another word for asuya in Sanskrit is matsara or matsarya, envy. So the Srimad Bhagavatam specifically and the Bhagavad Dharma is meant for those who are nirmatsara, who are completely free from envy, or one can extend that to say at least for those who are wanting sincerely to be free from envy. Excuse me. So this brings us to a very fundamental question of what actually is this envy? So far we've been speaking that we shouldn't be envious of others, unless if one is envious, then one cannot understand the Bhagavad Gita or the Bhagavatam, etc. But what exactly is this envy? Practically, what does it really mean? So it's very simple, really. If one feels pain at the happiness or success or advancement of others, that is envy. Or if one feels happiness at the distress or the failure or lack of advancement of others, that is envy. So very simple. And elsewhere at some point, perhaps that's something I can discuss next time, but I'll just briefly mention it here. Srila Prabhupada mentions here is a test of whether you live in the spiritual world or in the material world. Just go within yourself and see whether you're envious of the progress and advancement of others, even in devotional service. So this is something very practical for us as devotees, because we live in the midst of devotees. And some may be making more rapid advancement in Krishna consciousness than others, than us. Others may be shining in the world and in the society of devotees. Perhaps I may not be. So am I feeling envious of these other devotees? If I do, then I'm living in the material world. If I do not feel envy towards these other devotees, then I'm living in the spiritual world. A very simple definition of our place of residence. Physically, we may be living anywhere, it doesn't matter. But if in our heart we feel this envy, this pain at the advancement of other devotees, or if we feel some happiness at the failure or some difficulties in other devotees' life, then we are still in the material world. So very basic fundamental understanding of what envy is. In the Nectar of Devotion also there is an interesting definition of envy. And I'll read that. When one becomes envious or malicious, I beg your pardon, when one becomes malicious upon seeing another's advancement in life, his state of mind is generally called envy. So I'll repeat that. When one becomes malicious upon seeing another's advancement in life, his state of mind is generally called envy, which is similar to what I said earlier. So, in the material world, people become envious of seeing other people's material advancement. And when we try to do devotional service, we try to come out of the material state of consciousness and we try to get into Krishna consciousness, But those old materialistic traits do not leave us so easily. They're very sticky. They're clingy. They cling on to us. And the tendency to be envious of others reflects in our envy of devotees in terms of how much they're advancing in Krishna consciousness. So, therefore, one should not feel malicious. Malicious means, the word malice indicates a sense of harm. You know, when we want someone to be harmed in some way, or we want someone to be upset in some way, that's the connotation of the word malice. So in other words, it indicates that one does not really wish well for them. And that is why all the different qualities of devotees are connected, actually. Advaishta sarva bhutanam maitra karuna evacha nirankar nirahankar nirmamo nirahankara samadukha sukhakshami. In the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about the qualities of devotees that please him. And as he begins the enumeration of these qualities, the very first quality that he mentions is advaishta. Dvesha also means envy or hatred. So we see three words now in Sanskrit: asuya, matsarya, and here dvesha. So advaishta means that the devotee is not envious of others. Advaishta sarva bhutana maitra, maitri. So maitraha means one is a mitra or a friend. So these two are interconnected, because one cannot actually be somebody's friend or a well-wisher if one is envious. Envy comes in the way of relationships. It comes in the way of friendships. It comes in the way of being a well-wisher of someone. Because to the degree we have envy, we will not wish well for the other person. In other words, we will wish something bad happens to that person. That's called malice. So therefore, in the definition in Nectar of Devotion, we see when one becomes malicious upon seeing another's advancement in life, his state of mind is generally called envy. So envy, according to this definition then, is a state of mind. It is a state of consciousness. It reminds me of one famous personality in South India and Tamil Nadu. I don't speak the Tamil language, but this person called Thiruvalluvar is very famous in Tamil Nadu. He's something like Chanakya, you know, a great moralist and a very learned person, and very upright, many good teachings for practical living in this material world. So I remember reading many years ago the translation of some of the things he said. And Thiruvalluvar said that when one has envy in the heart, one doesn't need an enemy. Because the enemy does the job, or rather the envy does the job of an enemy. Because an enemy, what does he do? An enemy gives you pain, right? That's what an enemy does. But envy will bring us more pain than the enemy. When we are envious of someone, we automatically feel burning in the heart, we feel pain. And the person we are envious of may be blissfully unaware of our negative feelings towards that person. So that person is living happily, but we are in pain. So therefore, a person, you know, enemies, friends and enemies, as Prahlad says, you know, in the Bhagavatam, is all a question of consciousness. As he explains to Shanda and Amarka, his teachers, when they say, you know, where did you get this knowledge from? He says, first of all, I offer my obeisances to that Supreme Lord by whose illusory potency people make the distinction between friends and enemies. So we make this distinction because of being in ignorance. And so we envious of our enemies and we become favorably disposed to those we consider to be our friends. But it is short-lived because we are not genuinely well-wishers because we are not situated in spiritual consciousness. Therefore, whenever there is any reversal or any adversity, then immediately that feeling of camaraderie or that feeling of you know, being a well-wisher transforms into something negative. So therefore, one doesn't need an enemy when one is envious. So if one wants to be peaceful at heart, one needn't worry so much about external enemies. One should have to worry about one's internal enemies, because they will cause us more pain and more damage than the external enemies. Therefore, these six, lust, greed, anger, envy, pride, illusion, are called the six enemies, ripu. The word ripu indicates enemy. So, anyway, this is the definition of envy. And where is this envy coming from? What is the source of the, how did it all start? So, Srila Prabhupada refers to the 27th verse in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Iccha dvesha samuttena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sarge yanti parantapa. Iccha and dvesha, these are two important words. Iccha means desire or hankering, and dvesha means aversion or envy. So, samuttena indicates arisen from. So, Krishna explains here that well, so long as we, the moment we have these dualities of hankering and aversion or envy, then we become placed in a world of duality, the delusion of duality. Dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham. So all living entities then become placed in this delusion of duality, which arises from aversion or envy and its opposite, which is hankering. And sarge yanti parantapa. So, O parantapa, O Arjuna, this causes one to descend into the spiritual, into the material world. So, in other words, the real reason for our descending here is this envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I'd like to read some quotes from Prabhupada to explain this point. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 4th canto, 19th chapter, 2nd verse, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, in the material world, everyone comes to enjoy himself or lord it over material nature, is envious of others. So everyone who comes to enjoy is envious of others. This envy is also found in the personality of King of Heaven, Indra. Indra was several times envious of others. So, what Srila Prabhupada is saying here is that everyone who comes to enjoy the material nature automatically becomes envious of others. So, it is this enjoying spirit which is actually only the exclusive preserve or the prerogative of the Supreme Lord. When we try to usurp that territory, that exclusive preserve of the Lord, when we develop that enjoying spirit, then automatically envy follows as a natural result. Then again, in a lecture, on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says, this is a lecture on the 23rd verse of the 8th chapter of the first canto. He says, our jealousy and envy began from our envy of Krishna. Just like the Mayavadis, why is Krishna God? I am also God. This is the beginning of material life, to become envious of Krishna and think, why should Krishna be the enjoyer? I shall be the enjoyer. This is Maya. Actually, only Krishna can be enjoyer. And if we supply ingredients for his enjoyment, that is the perfection of life. So we see something very important here. The desire to enjoy life independent of Krishna, or the desire to enjoy, lord it over this material world, is an automatic indication of envy. So, when we say that everyone in the world is envious, it is obvious in the dealings of people with each other, but fundamentally, one can say the living entities in this material world are envious because they have the enjoying spirit. And this enjoying spirit is misplaced in the living entity. It is properly placed only in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if one acknowledges this and relinquishes this artificial enjoying spirit and recognizes that only when we cooperate with each other in order to give Krishna enjoyment, then we will become free of the envious mentality. So the root of envy is envy of Krishna, and the root of envy of Krishna is also the desire to enjoy independently. The two go together. So therefore, we today try to have a bit of a philosophical understanding of the term envy. And since we have a few minutes left, I'll just indicate a bit of what Srila Prabhupada says about the nature of envy and hankering in this material world. Maybe I should cover it next time. I think it'll be easier. It'll take a longer time. So perhaps I can now leave some time open for questions. Is that okay for now? I'll leave the floor open for questions. If any of you have any questions, you may ask. Either you can just post. Hare Krishna. Okay, so the question is that how do we acknowledge the existence of envy in our heart and what is a solution for it? Acknowledgement part I have dealt with today. The solution part I will deal with next time, in the next session, when we are going to speak about the practical aspects of envy. So to briefly recapitulate what I said earlier about acknowledgement. As Prabhupada said, if, you know, he says one thing there, that just as nobody needs to give you a certificate to tell you whether you are full after eating. You know it yourself. You don't need to be told that your stomach is full. Similarly, you don't need to be told whether you are envious of somebody or not. right? So all you have to do is to look around and see if one is feeling something negative about the progress of somebody else, you know, then automatically one knows that one is living in the material world because one has that. So that is a practical acknowledgement of one's state of mind. And philosophically also we have seen how the existence of the enjoying spirit indicates that there is envy still left in the heart. Even if one may not actually be feeling ill about other devotees so much, but to the extent that enjoying spirit exists, the envy exists. So in this way, philosophically and also practically, one can come to the point of acknowledging the existence of envy in our heart. And as I said, as far as the solution to that is concerned, we'll discuss it in the next session on Friday morning. The next question. Hare Krishna. Okay, so the question is, how can we help those who we can clearly see are envious? I think we can get into that perhaps in the next session. I think it'll be, because we'll be dealing with more practical things. And if it's not answered there, please remember to ask me that question again at the end of the next session. Today was mostly a philosophical approach towards understanding what envy is, the origins of envy, and to test ourselves whether we are envious or not, and how to understand that we are envious. Okay, so I will deal with this in the next class. Is there any other question? Hare Krishna. Oh, okay. All the way from New Jersey, USA. Okay, yes, please. Yes. I didn't follow. Can you say that again? Okay. So your question is, when other devotees are doing very well in their devotional service, and if we become envious of them, can that envy help us to, or become an inducement for us to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, right? Can that help us to grow? Well, it may induce us to do more, yes. Maybe, well, I have to also now, do as well as this person. This person is getting all the glory and I'm not, so I should work harder at my devotional service to, come up to that platform. So in one sense, it may appear that it is so, that it may induce us to do more. But it's not a really healthy approach. It may work in a limited way, but it's not healthy. What should motivate us is appreciation, which is the opposite of envy. So rather than envying that person for his or her devotional progress, if we appreciate that genuinely from our heart, and then try to use that as a source of inspiration to do more. So instead of being envious and having that as an inducement for us to advance in Krishna consciousness, if there is a healthy appreciation of the good qualities and letting that serve as an encouragement and inspiration to us, that will be a better way to do it. Because when something negative becomes a source of inspiration, it can also work the other way. Because if we are not able to do that, then the negativity breeds within our heart, that envy will breed within our heart. And we get into a materialistic frame of competitiveness. So there is a healthy competition too, like in book distribution, for example. Every temple competes with another temple. So it's not done, in a negative frame of mind. Yes, it's done in a positive frame. I remember many, many years ago, when I was a new devotee, I heard of one instance where one devotee from one book distribution party went and deflated the tires of the Sankirtan van of the other book distribution party because he didn't want them to go out, you know, so that his own party could go out and get more books done on that day. So, you see, that's what can happen. If we let negativity become the source of our inducement or motivation. So it's always healthy to let the positive qualities become sources of encouragement for us. Right? Okay, one final question. I don't mind going more, but I think it's 8:30 now. So yes, one more question. Yes, please ask. Okay, so of course, we'll, again, as I said, we'll be dealing more with the practical part next time. But anyway, your question is that there are these six enemies, kaam, krodh, lobha, moha, mad, matsarya. And matsarya or envy comes at the end. Why is that so? That was the first part of your question. The listing of these six enemies doesn't indicate necessarily that there is an order or hierarchy or anything like that. It's just a listing of the six enemies, internal enemies, that's all. But fundamental to all this is envy. If we can get rid of envy, and if we do devotional service properly, then everything else, the other enemies, will automatically be dealt with. As we saw in the very first verse of Bhagavad Gita that I discussed at the beginning of my talk, Krishna says that if one is not austere, if one is not a devotee, if one is not engaged in devotional service, one may still not understand Bhagavad Gita unless one has become free from envy. Right? So even if one is a practicing devotee, if envy exists, then the realization of Krishna consciousness is hard to obtain. So therefore, envy is a very, very important thing. And as regards whether one needs to separately deal with each of these six enemies or it happens simultaneously, well, the answer is both. In brief, by practicing Krishna consciousness in general, automatically all the six enemies are destroyed progressively. At the same time, if one is particularly troubled by any given negative quality, then one may need to pay special attention to that and take the remedial measures practically at according to the instructions of senior devotees and the scriptures of the Guru and the Vaishnavas. Okay, so I think we'll stop here, and I will see you all again on Friday morning, where we will continue with the discussion on envy.